So truth being in reality, they all refer to the same essence. It's just the who am I question, or to whom does it arise, or who is experiencing this, who is aware of this experience or this object, thought, feeling, or sensation, entity, whatever, who is aware of this. I wouldn't want to say any way of looking at it is more fundamental than any other, just because truth is certainly fundamental, and so is reality. I'm not denying that. It's just, I think often people may inquire into what is true, but when it comes to inquiring into your own nature, your own self, your own body, mind, emotions, that one considers oneself in an ego-identified state, that if that doesn't get questioned, I hear this a lot with people that teach mindfulness. They'll be like, okay, look at this, look at that, become aware of this, become aware of that. But who's becoming aware of it? That question doesn't get asked. Usually, I would say usually it's not asked. So in that way, it's fundamental. I think practically speaking, if you're doing mindfulness, but you assume that you're just the self, which is ego, you'll get some benefit probably. It's like learning how to sweep dust out of your house or dirt out of your house, but you leave the door open and there's a storm outside and it keeps getting dirty again. And if it's bad enough, it'll pile up and you'll be overwhelmed, because the ego is the fundamental issue that we're dealing with. And if you're going to do this work, the work of waking up, not the work of becoming a more effective manager or something, if you want to wake up, you have to question the roots of the ego, which are definitely in self. And you can get there by asking what's true. It's just that if you really do, if you ask what's true, it comes back to you. And if you stop, and I've seen that too, where people are doing, say, the work of Byron Katie, they're asking, is it true, and so on, that as soon as it becomes uncomfortable to the ego, they'll stop. Some people. If you want to wake up, you have to ideally start with the foundational idea that you're not you, as you think you are. You're the timeless essence of all that is. You're the awareness that is aware of objects, forms that change, and so on. But that includes the body, the mind, and the emotions. It includes the self, the person. That's not you. That's basically an object arising within you. You don't have to start with that exactly, but it doesn't really start until you're willing to go there and assume it. It's interesting. I don't know which is harder, assuming that who you are in your essence is divine, in a sense, or facing the falsehood of who you think you are, because they kind of go together. I mean, they do. For me, the hardest part is the parts that feel like you. You have to see there might be shame there. There might be very difficult feelings that for you to face those things consciously be very painful, perhaps, or very uncomfortable to admit certain things to yourself or to others, just to be honest about who you are and seeing the falsehood that you've gotten wrapped up in. I just think it helps to start with this notion that it's falsehood all the way down. It's an attachment to a form, and that's what ego is. I think some teachings, really good ones, will say that the ultimate truth is who you are in your essence. Maybe you haven't realized it yet, but that's a premise. Again, you start with that. But it'd be really easy for that just to get co-opted by the ego, and you're just like, oh, I'm a special muckety-muck. It's not that you're this person in a body, this mortal person in a body who also happens to be. You can't have both. Yes, who you are in your essence is the truth of all. And you won't realize that until you let go of your little fucking scraps of nothing that you call self. But let it go. Let it go. The tendencies people want to hold on to self, that's ego again, wants to hold on to self. You know, when they say you can't take it with you, like when you physically die, you can't take physical things with you. I think we're at a point where we agree with that. I know in the old days they used to bury kings with, not only with precious objects that they might need in the afterlife, that was the assumption, but also animals and even slaves, servants, they would kill them. You don't get to keep it. We've talked about hoarders. I mean, it's hard to let go. You're not going to have a spacious house until you let go of your garbage. And that clutching tendency is very difficult. You can't have both. And the thing is, here's the thing. So some of these hoarder shows, they try to educate them about hoarding disorder, and they'll get a team to come in and clean their house up. It's really clear, though, that if the hoarding mindset is not transcended, they'll just fill the house back up. So it's like you're not going to realize true spaciousness and functionality until you're really free of that tendency to hoard. And what we tend to do is hoard self. It's strange, yeah, because the tendency to attach to thoughts creates a sense of self. So, well, is the attachment to self or is the attachment self? Right? Is the attachment itself create a sense of self? That's where it comes from. And yeah, it's kind of both. Like I said, this question, to whom does it arise? I like that because there's a part of us, I think, that wants to discuss this philosophically and come to some conclusion. And it doesn't work that way. It's like you want to put together your piece of IKEA furniture and you're discussing how that's going to be done. You lay everything out. But at some point, you just have to do it. Right? You follow the instructions. You can't just look at it and read it and be like, great, we're done. No. So to ask, to whom does it arise? To practice that is something you do. And then, of course, there's the philosophical game of, well, who does it? You know, no, do it. Just do it. Find out what that is. Do it until you find out who you are. And then see if you want to ask that question. That very clever little semantic game, you know, well, who this, who that. It's really just something that you do. And it's delightful if you practice it sincerely, you know. There is something about laying oneself down. If you start to intuit into what God is or the divine or absolute reality, whatever you want to call that, truth itself, there's a spirit of, you call it surrender, I guess. And it's a certain attitude of laying oneself down in a sense in service to the realization of this, of reality itself. The teaching is that there's one truth, one reality, one being, and you're that. And to realize that, well, it's the greatest gift you could offer. It's everything. And whoever you feel yourself to be, feels separate from that. Feels like, well, I feel kind of like a separate human and, you know, born among that and blah, blah, blah. Fine. You start with that. The teaching is that you're going to surrender that and realize this greater reality, but you can't keep that limited sense and wake up. Like, it's going to prevent that. Again, it's like, you know, a hoarder can perhaps have a cleaner home and start to realize what space is, clear some stuff out, get some help to do that, or just get some coaching, get motivated, get some help, clear out the house a little bit. Like, oh, this is nice, but it starts to creep back in. Or like an alcoholic who gets a taste of sobriety, but they haven't really defeated the craving. The alcoholic is really a tendency. Like the hoarder, or the alcoholic, the addict is a state of mind that has to be, in a sense, broken, has to die. And that's what ego is. It's an attachment. So, I mean, you could keep some of those elements of self and still be attached in that way and start to intuit into the value of the transcendent. It's not even a feeling. It's what might be called a direct intuition, radical intuition, that's not... it's not thought or sense experience, it's something else. Realization. So that realization, I think don't the Buddhists call that Satori in Zen? A moment of Satori is like a realization. It's not the final realization of nirvana and, you know, ego death and all that. But it's a hint or a taste or something. And that matters. And that means you lay yourself down even more because you're like, oh, you've tasted the wine a little bit and you're like, okay, that's it. Whoever I assume myself to be is in the way and I'm going to learn how to let that go. And the question, to whom does it arise, is, I think, extremely useful. It's simple. I'm thinking of Ramana Maharshi, who's best known for using it, at least in a modern context. You can do it really any time. It's a practice. I'm looking at a coffee cup and I could say, well, to whom does that arise? And that's actually interesting. It's just the self. If your inquiry or your meditation doesn't get, it's like if I inquire into the cup and then like, who wants the cup? And then at some point you're getting into deeper stuff within yourself about desire and aversion and how it works, craving, attachment. And you're, as awareness itself, becoming aware of these things by practicing, to whom does this craving arise? It's very interesting, whatever that craving might be. There's no judgment. And judgment might be there, but to ask to whom does this arise is not a judgy. It's as if to ask, first of all, what's there and who's aware of it. If you stepped on a thorn or something, and I'm not saying this is the ideal situation to do this, but you could do it. You step on a thorn and you're like, I am. And then you're in pain and there's the pain, just the pain signal from stepping on the thorn. Then there's the pain of mentally complaining about it, that it shouldn't be happening, as well as maybe a sense of, oh, I'm such an idiot for doing that. Or something's wrong with me because I did something, quote, wrong. That's a judgment. To whom does that pain arise is a really interesting thing. So to whom does the pain arise? Immediately, you may become aware of it arises to the one who's pissed off or who's feeling shitty. And it'll have a feeling. So there's a feeling there, not just a thought, a feeling, thought, feeling. The one that's complaining and feeling bad about itself in relation to the thorn and the stepping part. That pain, and then what you might call suffering, which is like the mental part of it. Okay, so to whom does that pain arise? Oh, to the one that's pissed off. Then it's like your vision then goes to the one that's pissed off because it's closer to you. It feels closer. It's in your body. The thorn is outside of you. It actually penetrates the skin, sends a pain signal. You're hurt, and yet there's something about the mental part that's very dear, very close, very intimate in a way. You look at that. So to whom does the pain arise? To the one that's pissed off. Okay, when I say quote unquote, the one who's pissed off, that is a thought, feeling, sensation, experience in that moment. Why? Because it's pissed off. I mean, that's part of it, is there's anger. There's irritation, there's complaining, There's the mental habit of complaining, saying it shouldn't be happening when it obviously is happening, the pain that results from that. So then the question is then obviously, to whom does that arise? And then it's as if that one that's pissed off, that structure, sometimes I call it putting it on the slab. It's like a scientist putting a specimen on a clear field, looking through a microscope, or putting it in a tray or in a petri dish or something, looking at it. What is it? To whom does this arise? I'm looking at it. The one that's pissed off. That's a little bit more challenging. To whom does that arise? Well, what about the one that's feels bad about being pissed off? That's a little more subtle. Like right now, I imagine I'm feeling that in my left shoulder. I don't know why. Trying that on, it feels like it's in my left shoulder. Oh, and whose left shoulder? Then to whom does that arise? You become aware of it, and it like recedes in a way to a place where there's basically just pure awareness. And when I say pure awareness, it sounds, one could think, oh, pure awareness, pure as the driven snow and far above and beyond. Uh-huh. No, that's a judgment. See, it's tricky. The presumption is you are that already. So you don't make it happen. You just realize that it's already the case. The one who feels superior or feels special, like, oh, pure awareness, and feel a little attachment to that. Or you feel like, oh, I'm impure. I don't deserve it. That one that's under a rock. Oh, I'm aware. To whom does that arise? And when you say to whom does that arise, it's, I want to say neutral, but neutral sounds cold and distant. It's not. It's a good word, but maybe dispassionate. Consciousness awakens to itself and is satisfied. Now, one might say, well, wait, isn't it already satisfied? Isn't it already? Do this practice, find out what I'm talking about, and then tell me if that question comes up for you. Like the question, who are you, is interesting. If the realization is suchness, or, you know, it's really more of a Advaita Vedanta type technique. If you're abiding in the Atman, they call it the self. I don't like that translation. I like the Buddhist terms like essential nature, the truth of who you are, your true nature. There are people out there who want to play games with this, who learn this. Because it's really simple and kind of easy. Jed McKenna, he mentions this technique and says, you know, talks about Ramana Maharshi, refers to him, but he says it's an entire teaching that can be written on the inside of a matchbook cover. Yeah, that's pretty simple. Who are you? To whom does this experience arise? Who is having this experience? However you want to put it, but who are you is usually how it's phrased. Self-inquiry. Simple. It doesn't require philosophy. You don't have to be well-versed in philosophy to do it. So I think it's attractive to a lot of people. If you go online and see people that are talking about it, it can easily turn into a little semantic game that people play. Like, oh, who plays it then? This is something you do for yourself. It's not something you do as a way to try to control someone else or try to elevate yourself or to act, quote unquote, act spiritual or whatever. That's important. Something you do within yourself, for yourself. I mean, you could be helped by a teacher or by a friend or something, maybe, but maybe if you asked for it. I'm talking about it. I'm discussing it more than teaching it right now, but I'm not saying anyone should do it unless they want to. It's deeply personal. So, I mean, don't go around. Someone says pass the salt and you say, oh, who is it that wants to pass the salt? It's sacred. Don't be a dick. So you could write that inside a matchbook cover. Yeah, don't be a dick. Do the work. Self-inquiry. If you're having a peaceful experience, you don't really need to do this. You could, but the question, to whom does this arise, the thing that arises, usually is something problematic and something you're upset about. Otherwise, why do it? I mean, you could play around with it, but start with the stuff that's really bothering you. Little habits you notice. See, when I say habits you notice, some may ask, well, wait, who's noticing it? First of all, don't do that to anyone else as a way to try to be clever or get one up on someone or anything. But it is a good point. Your nature is pure awareness, so that's the one that notices. It's just, it gets tangled up with, or at least apparently, not truly, but apparently gets tangled up with ego. We talk a lot about consciousness, and that's really what noticing is consciousness or awareness. No one is utterly unconscious. Even criminals and dictators and evil people have some consciousness. They can notice things. It's just, how deeply does that penetrate? Whom does it serve? We're all given the tools we need to wake up, but we squander them often. You could give someone $1 million, and if they go into a casino and they're a gambling addict, it's not going to last much longer. Even if they win some, over time, you'll lose it. Ego's sort of like a damper on it, and it's pretty powerful. Let's say there's some kind of brutal warlord somewhere in some country, just hypothetically, torturing children, doing horrible things, and just generally being a dick in a big way, right? Let's say he robs people, he's hoarding in his own way, raiding villages, stealing anything of value, and over time he may become wealthy in a certain sense, or relatively speaking. And he'll notice that, his bank account, whatever that is. But there's going to be paranoia. There's going to be tremendous fear of loss, anger, what the Buddhists call defilements that just kill your happiness. Like, you're not going to be happy. You may have moments of pleasure. Someone like that probably has to use some kind of substance. Cocaine, it's dopamine. They just want to feel good. So there is awareness there. It's just limited. And it's put in service to ego. It's an illusion that it could ever really serve ego, but it's a gift. We're given that. And then we squander it. And only too late realize, if we're lucky, we realize that the error of our ways. Usually, conventionally, if someone says, okay, I want you to become aware of blank, some object, a thought, a feeling, or a sensation, physical object, something, the assumption is usually you as a physical person in a body become aware. And that's a big part of the illusion, is just that somehow that consciousness arises from mental activity. And it's not true. You can figure that out for yourself. And anyone who might be hearing this, just look up The Hard Problem of Consciousness, David Chalmers. There's no real evidence that the brain produces consciousness. No one's proven that yet. I'm just saying that consciousness is fundamental, and that the thoughts arise within consciousness, and that consciousness survives what we call death, and waking up to it is satisfying and basically happy because it's the fundamental reality. But yeah, I mean, if say you go to see a therapist or something and it's, okay, what are you feeling? Or maybe you're doing a breathing exercise, you know, become aware of the sensation of your breath. That's an exercise of awareness, and it is a noticing, and it's really important not to pat each other on the back too much, ourselves. If you're a hoarder, literally, you have to break the spell of this hoarding addiction, this problem. And it doesn't matter if you might have a great day where you get a bunch of stuff cleared out. It will fill back up again and it can kill you. Break the addiction to boxes and garbage and then clear it out and it won't fill up again. And then you could be happy and functional. Here's the thing. In some real sense, if you think about it, if you have a hoarded home that's full of stuff, you could say there's not much space. That's true. But only functionally, because the space is there whether they're filling it up or not. The space is there, it's just full of junk. Have you harmed the space? I'm talking about space itself. The functional part of it is completely fucked up and not healthy, right? The actual situation is there's just as much space whether your house is hoarded or not, but you haven't realized it. And that if someone helps you clear out some of it, you start to, in a sense, realize what space is a little bit. You won't realize the fullness of it until you break that addiction or that habit, that spell, the hoarding tendency. So ego is like a hoarding tendency or an addiction, an attachment that creates a sense of self that we cherish until we don't. I would say you're fortunate in that sense, because you still have the ability to do that. And you could say, yeah, this space in a hoarded house is the same as a space in a non-hoarded house. But if you haven't realized it yet, who gives a shit? So the question of, is the noticing that one might do conventionally the same as the noticing that occurs in an awakened condition? Is it the same? Yes and no. Ultimately the same, yes. Functionally, not at all. As long as that addict is still functioning, running or dysfunctioning, you know, as long as that attachment, that craving, that's the cause. As long as the cause is still in place, there's still work to do. And it's pretty similar to the hoarded house situation, pretty similar. You almost would call noticing awareness of space. There's awareness of things, but you have to be separate from something to see it. You have to have a space to see it in. Just like a scientist has to have a clear work area where she can view things. And yeah, a hoarded house, if you have a huge pile of things, it's hard to see specific things in that pile. And that's similar to a mental state where you're so full of ideas, thoughts, and beliefs, and memories, and projections, and all that. It's hard to be clear in that. It's harder. You can do it. More or less suffering. And dysfunction is suffering. It causes a feeling of lack and unhappiness. So the first question is, the most effective one is, okay, well, what are you noticing now? And to whom does that arise? You know, that's really where that's what it is. And I've seen these shows where they have these organizing specialists, and some of them are psychologists, but they have a way of doing it where they'll pick up an item off the hoard and say, and they'll say, what are you feeling right now? Well, they usually say, okay, see this? I'm going to take this with me, and you're not going to know what I'm going to do with it. I might keep it. I might give it away. I might throw it away. I might burn it. You don't know. How does that feel when you think about that? There's an object, but there's all these associations with it. Mm-hmm. It brings up your cravings, your desires, your attachments. And it's similar. It's just what I'm suggesting is like, the one that's desirous or craving and doesn't want to let this thing go and feels troubled by that, that's also an object, not just the physical thing. On the show, it's usually a doll from some time in the past, maybe a collectible item that they're attached to. Mm. It's mental and emotional. It's not physical. You may feel it in your body almost like a physical sensation, but mentally generated. To say to whom does that arise is a deeper practice. And then it regresses in a way. You're isolating the subjective element. The subjective element being awareness, the I am awareness, the awareness that you are. And in a sense, purifying it, functionally speaking. Because remember, in an absolute sense, it's there whether you fill it up with crap or not. But you haven't realized it, so you're not happy because you haven't realized it. The realization is, to whom does this arise? It starts to purify and clarify your awareness, and you'll start seeing how these defilements operate. Desires, cravings, fear, sadness, attachment. And the more pure the awareness becomes, the more it'll see what's there. And in a sense, it's like seeing what to do with it without attachment, including the attachments. See, those start to let go too. Because it's important for a hoarder not just to get rid of the physical things, but to get rid of the mental attachments as well. And little by little, we start to become happy for no reason, because we're starting to realize who we are. We're behaving as a realized person would behave to some degree, to a degree that we start to become aware of that. Like, wow, I want more of that. So you continue to practice. And then, yeah, who practices? Well, the practice is there's some kind of suffering going on in you. When you ask to whom does that suffering arise, it requires a certain awareness to do that. And it becomes clearer. And at some point it breaks. Like an addict, you just lose your desire for whatever drink or drug or behavior. You're like, yeah, I don't need all this stuff. And you start getting rid of it. And then you'll keep some of it. Why? Because it's functional. Then life becomes about function, not about identity. You see, we attribute identity to things, and that's a mistake. When it comes down to it, who you are is free of that, just like space is free of all those boxes. It doesn't need it. It's an illusion. It causes suffering. Do it if you're experiencing suffering and want to just be more free of it. I'm saying you could utterly be free of it. Because you realize, it's like realizing space. See, it's already free. It already is what it is. You are that already. It's worth it.